Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back much belatedly to the Boundary of Disaster, because for the four of us, there hasn't really been much motor racing type things to talk about because we're all a bit jaded and bitter. So joining me in the jaded and bitter club is Matt Willis, as always.
Hello.
Adam Berry. Hello.
Hello.
And my estranged daughter, as she's left me to go off to uni, Ellie Byrne-Osborne. Hello.
Hello.
So we've reconvened basically because the low point that we thought Formula One had hit last year has gone even lower, which is good to know that there is no depth to the despair that that sport can create for us. And we just really wanted to get together so that we could vent about what's going on at Red Bull, what's going on at the FIA, because that's seemingly getting worse as well, and just the general state of it. Because as racing fans, yeah, we're not in a happy place. So who wants to summarize the mess? And then we can start with Red Bull and start working our way through. Who wants to do summaries?
I can if you like.
Go for it, Adam. To be fair, we were going to have your lovely wife on and she could have summarized this beautifully with much swearing.
She bailed on us. She bailed on us.
But she bailed. So.
Hello, so. Watching Netflix. Where do we start? I mean, talking about the sport in general, it looks like a status quo again, doesn't it, really? Red Bull are looking dominant. We're going into another season where, before every race, I think we know who's going to win it, which is not great from a motor racing perspective point of view. In fact, is it even really motor racing at the moment? That's a big question. Obviously, the Christian Horner saga, I want to call it, because it goes one way and then it goes the other, and we think we know what's going on, and then we think we don't. But to summarise, for anyone that's been living in a box for the last 2 weeks and hasn't seen any news or anything like that, this is the accusations levelled at Christian Horner for improper behaviour. I think those were the words used in the workplace in relation to his behaviour towards... Still don't think we know for absolute certain, but presumably a female employee at Red Bull, which led to an investigation from Red Bull, which, and again, I'm loath to use the word cleared here because the wording was very particular, but was dismissed with Horner not necessarily being found guilty of whatever.
Yeah, when it comes to wording, we'll get our former wording master, Mr. Willis, to talk about how carefully that was.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
As a former...
We'll come back to that. Let's finish the recap, because I'm quite enjoying Adam trying to choose his words as carefully as he hasn't said allegedly yet, which if any lawyers are listening, all of this is alleged, and we don't particularly fancy going to court, but we will. Yeah, happy days.
Yeah, well, why not? You know, I mean, I can absolutely promise you that there are people saying a hell of a lot worse than we are on other podcasts. Mm. So we're okay, I think. But yes, so
let's see what Ellie has to say in a minute. Allegedly.
Allegedly, yes, all related to sort of improper conduct in the workplace. And as I say, the charges or the whole investigation, the whole situation was dismissed. And then everyone thought, well, that's that then. Those of us who, and just counting on the screen now, I think that's four people in here who don't very much like Christian Horner. We're kind of hoping that he might not be around much longer.
In the sense that he'd be working in Formula One, not like
we don't wish for him to die.
No,
we're going to get that bad.
That's definitely another podcast.
Yeah, thanks for the clarity.
Yes,
So it was dismissed, and we all thought, okay, well, let's just get over that then. Mr. Horner's going to be around for a little bit longer yet, and then there were these so-called leaks of the messages and the, I've not seen a great many of them, but picture messages and videos and all sorts were in a Google Drive that was supposedly leaked. And of course, when they first came out, no one knew whether they were real or not. I think now most people have come to terms with the fact that they were. There's not been a great deal of denial from Red Bull or from Horner himself. So we make the assumption that these are genuine. And of course, it's divided the world in terms of the severity of what's been said and what's been allegedly done. And there goes my camera again. And so we're kind of in, or up until today anyway, we're in the position of there being a little bit of a quiet period in between the messages being leaked and all of these rumours swirling around about a power play from Jos Verstappen and the fact that Red Bull had already made a decision to get rid of Horner and that he fought them legally on it and all sorts of stuff like that. And then today it transpired that the accuser has been suspended on full pay by Red Bull. And rumours surrounding that one as well are that there was some dishonesty involved or something along those lines. And again, it's all alleged. The fact is, we don't know what the hell is going on. So, Boney?
No. I was going to say that was well summarised so far. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the only thing that we've missed off is the fact that the chief of the FIA is under investigation for sticking his beak into potential race results. The two alleged interferences involve him telling the race directors not to apply points to Fernando Alonso at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix last season, so presumably around this time last season, which at the time, as I understand, prevented a podium for a Mercedes car. And there are some people that believe that was the incentive in him doing what he did. Who knows? And then the other one, of course, is that apparently he tried to have race directors cancel the race in Vegas last season, which, again, is an interesting one because we're not really sure why he would want to do that, but I guess it's something we can discuss.
Cancelling that would have saved me 2 hours of my time. That was completely pointless, so I wouldn't have complained too much about that one.
That's true.
Yeah, maybe he was just doing it to save us the dreariness of that race. But in terms of the Horner business and the care with which the statement was made. Now, I think for me, a lot of the difficulty around this is just how tightly the information has been controlled in some respects from Red Bull. To the extent where we don't know exactly, I don't believe we know exactly what the allegations against Horner were initially and to what the actual grievance that was taken out was, what the details of that were, what the specific allegation was. I mean, Horner's always said he denies the allegations, but I won't say what the allegations were. And then we know that this internal investigation that that Red Bull carried out, supposedly with an independent KC, undergoing that, leading that that investigation, and the terminology that the statement used was the grievance has been dismissed. It did not say anything like the allegations against Mr. Horner were found to be without foundation or something like that. It didn't say anything about those allegations, so it's without knowing exactly what was accused and what the content of that was, we don't exactly know what has been dismissed. And obviously this was followed by the leak, which gave a great deal more sense, assuming that those messages were real and were accurate. Again, as Adam says, no denial of that from Red Bull, but no actual confirmation that those are real. I think, as Adam says, probably a fair assumption, but we should make the point that it's not confirmed. So the way the statement was made, and that the complainant has the right to appeal, which I think was an important point, which... So again, the language used in the media stories in the morning was that Christian Horner had been cleared, which I think was an interpretation...
Oversimplification.
I think it was an oversimplification, and also it's an interpretation of what it means for a grievance to be dismissed in disciplinary terms, in workplace disciplinary terms. And we don't know what the details of the workplace disciplinary stuff were going on, whether any sort of disciplinary measures were applied, presumably not. And also there's the fact that yes, the grievance may have been dismissed, but the investigation may have raised other things that were problematic. We don't know anything about that. So there's a whole load of stuff in terms of workplace disciplinary procedures that I think we're just not getting, which is making it look like on the outside, Christian Horner was completely exonerated, squeaky clean, did nothing wrong. And I don't think you can actually make any of those inferences, especially then when you start looking at the fact that the information has been so very tightly controlled coming out of Red Bull, means that some of the inferences that are being drawn from it, we just don't know if they're fair or correct or not. And, I mean, it certainly seems that if the messages were accurate, then there is certainly a case for... put it this way, I think most people... having a relationship of the nature that is implied in the messages in their workplace with a junior colleague would struggle to escape from disciplinary consequences, I would think. And that's just my view on the matter. So I think there's kind of two things going on. One is there's the very, very tightly controlled nature of stuff coming out of Red Bull, but we've also got these other bits and pieces coming to the media, which are obviously being briefed and leaked from interested parties on both sides. So we're getting this very partial picture, and it's very difficult to tell exactly what's going on. And I think this is very, very far from over.
Ellie, you're considerably younger than the three of us. What's your take been on this? Because you're a relative newcomer to Formula One, having been dragged into it kicking and screaming by me and Drive to Survive. As someone who doesn't have maybe the baggage of us from growing up with Mansell, Hill, Schumacher, that era, what's your take on all this? Because, you know, we're kind of used to... yeah. I'm going to say this. We're used to Bernie and Max making things work because it's Bernie and Max and it's their show. That's not been the case for a long time. So for you, with what's going on with Red Bull, with the FIA, what's your view on it as you're one of us who still actually watches this thing?
I know, I was going to say, I was the only person watching it on Saturday.
I did actually watch the highlights. So I apologise to the rest of you. I got sucked back in. Anyway, Ellie, do go on.
Yeah, so, I mean, I first heard about it from the group chat, and then suddenly everyone was making memes about Google Drive to survive with all these leaked messages. And I won't lie, at first I was a very, very, I don't believe them. I can't see Christian Horner typing in text talk like that, but, you know, everyone has weird little things like that that they do, I suppose. But I think Dad, you did make a point when we were talking about it, that it has the right clarity of a conversation that deepfakes and AI don't always get. So that does put that... But if it is Christian Horner or if it is someone else and she's changed the name, obviously we don't know. However... the fact that the allegations have gone on for so long, and like you said, nothing's been denied, and they haven't been immediately dismissed and kind of seen as like poppycock or whatever, shows that there must be some kind of truth to it. And yeah, on the race weekend, I mean, it was a bit awkward watching it. Every time they panned to Christian Horner, he looked very on edge and very uneasy. And I mean, obviously you would if people were saying these things about you, whether they're true or not. However, I don't think the commentators would have been saying the things they were saying if there weren't some kind of breadth of whispers in the paddock that they were true. And if we are to believe what was said on the messages, on the WhatsApps, then it seems like it was fairly common knowledge that he was, that Christian was doing things with this employee. I mean, doing, like, from one of them, it's like talking about them on the jet and stuff like that. And obviously it was not going to be just the two of them on that jet. So if there is other, if there are other people that know, then obviously they would confirm or deny or leave it, and they're choosing to leave it. So it means that if they're not denying it outright, there must be an element of truth to it. Sorry, it's gone.
I mean, so I think this whole thing.
One of the things that's. I was just going to say that this power dynamic at play here is interesting. If this was an ordinary company, and having worked for a few big companies where things happen in a workplace and then there's a process, Formula One teams are not normal companies, regardless of their size and their profits. Are we seeing in a case here where the power dynamic within this organization, which is a subsidiary of a much larger one, unlike almost all the other teams, because Mercedes is only a third share. Anyways, by the by, are we seeing something where we have a potential and alleged abuse of power, but then also in an organization where there's too much power being held to actually bring anything against that person?
You know, as a female, these workplace cases, sexual harassments are a very, very real thing. I mean, I've only worked part-time jobs and I've already experienced things like that. And they are a very new thing to still be being disciplined. I mean, a lot of people still don't think that sexual advances or whatever or any kind of form of harassment, they don't take forward any of these things because that's what they're used to. That is what is normal, and it is not normal. However, I think with F1 being such a in the light, it is, I mean, it's got its own Netflix series, it's everywhere now that it's all blown up. I mean, it's on every advert for everything. It's everywhere. You can't avoid it. And so bringing these things to light with F1 being in the spotlight, that is obviously going to cause a big stir, and there's obviously going to be people with different things to believe. But it does show that something needs to change. If a company that is in such the limelight as Red Bull Racing, if these things are happening, and quite frankly, quite out in the open, where else is it happening and where are these things not? And it does bring to mind at Hungary Race, I think it was 2022, 2021, when a Mercedes fan was assaulted and harassed by some Red Bull fans, and all the other teams brought out a statement, an apology, except Red Bull. And it's all of these flags that you're thinking about, and it really shows, is this a company that should be in the position of power that it is?
Yeah. No, I totally agree with all that. And I think it, for me, it brings home that, I mean, I worked in motorsport media 20 odd years ago. And the problem I've always had with the sport, and I think which is an ongoing problem with the sport, and which has very far from going away, and which is just there is this just deep-seated bigotry and misogyny within it. And it's a very male-dominated sport. It remains that way despite some advances in relatively recent years. Great news today, by the way, that F1 Academy will now be streamed free every session, which is brilliant. Really need that coverage. But anyway, there is just this deep-rooted core of it in motorsport, and it's going to take an awful lot of work to get rid of. And this is just kind of shining a light on some of those attitudes, and like Ellie says, some of those sort of norms that have been around in the sport and in those companies that are involved in the sport for a long time, and which have not even started to go away. And F1 sort of talks a good game about diversity and equality, but it's just so far to go. And things like, it's not just the incident itself, the episode itself, it's all the conversations around it, which just show you in F1's fandom, where you've got the new fandom, which has kind of come in relatively recently and is a lot more diverse and a lot more progressive about in its attitudes, and the old school motorsport fandom, which is dinosaurs really. And I think that's kind of throwing a lot of that to light. Some of the stuff you see on social media directed at the complainant against Christian Horner is just not fun. And I think this is something that the sport needs to tackle, and it kind of needs to do it like now and very, very intensively.
Well, is it really that surprising that a sport and a company and a brand of F1 with that few amount of women that these things are happening? Is it really that surprising that these things are going on? It's not, and it's really upsetting that, especially considering the amount of publicity and the newcomers that have come into the sport. I mean, I think about last year there was a statistic that Silverstone set out where they had like an increase in like 80% more females attending or something. And it's like in a sport that is getting so much traction and so many more female fans, it's so disappointing to see that these things are happening right under everyone else's noses and no one's doing a thing.
But is this, as Matt was saying, is this because it has been a predominantly male sport? It's been a male fan base predominantly. You know, it's not that long since we got rid of scantily clad grid girls and the likes of that. Car launches with, you know, models standing in high heels on the front wings. I'm thinking of Tyrrell back in the day when they had that single bar thing. That's my age, ladies and gentlemen. But are we at an inflection point where, because of the size of Formula One, I'm going to throw this at Adam, have we reached this point where, because of the size and the money that's in it now, these old habits are becoming a lot more stark? And, you know, if we take in the Susie Wolf investigation over the winter as well, which was nuts, do we think that we've reached a point where the spotlight is now so bright that these things that the likes of team bosses and drivers used to be able to get away with can't anymore?
100%. I mean, I made a comment in a similar vein to you guys the other day about Ben Salaim in relation to him seemingly not being able to recognise that it is very difficult to get away with anything these days when you're in such media spotlight all the time. And yeah, I just think that there seems to be this sort of lag behind in terms of people's realization that, you know, everything that people say and do is scrutinized to the nth degree these days, and rightly so. And that people do need to be more conscious of changing their outlook on things like that. But I agree, going back, that Formula One seems to be a sport that is struggling with it more than any other, which is not something, being as a big football fan, is not something that I thought I would say, because I thought that football would be that one. And football seems to be getting better quite quickly. If you push Joey Barton to one side, football seems to be...
I'd like to push him off a cliff, and that's like legendary. Yeah.
But generally speaking, okay, football's got an awful long way to go. An awful long way to go. But it seems to be moving a hell of a lot quicker than Formula One does. And we're talking about sports where the very best of each discipline are on similar sorts of money. They're on very, very similar sort of levels in terms of their status as sportsmen or sportswomen. But Formula One is still really struggling, and I hate to say it, but it doesn't help when some of the people that are in the positions that they are left in those positions, and they're allowed to make the sort of judgments that they do and the comments that they do, for example, binning off Formula W. Was it called Formula W? It was just called W Series.
I think it was different things to different people, but I think yeah. W Series was...
I think binning that off and not really at the time having any clear idea of where they were going to go as an alternative was a mistake, because it left a lot of very talented racing drivers wondering where they were going to go, which is, if you think about it from the context of any other career, is it's a very stark thing to have to face up to.
And I understand it was like $1 million was all they needed.
That was the difference, yes.
Yeah, it was, yeah. You know, it was a ridiculously low amount of money to let that series go. But sorry, Adam.
But what's most alarming about that sort of scenario is that, you know, there are, okay, I wouldn't say every driver, but there are certainly some drivers who could have bankrolled that without a second thought. And I'm not suggesting that they should have done. I'm not suggesting that somebody should have come up like a knight in shining armour and said, you know, here we go, here's what you need. It could have been done anonymously, and it wouldn't have mattered as long as the support was there from the right areas. You get drivers that are very outspoken about the female side of the sport. And Lewis Hamilton is one. And I love Lewis. I always have, always will. Got a bit of a man crush on the bloke. But not as
much of a crush as Sophie.
She would fight me off with a very large stick, given the opportunity. Or a very, very strong baseball bat. But it would have been nice at that point in time to have somebody like him step forward and go, this cannot be allowed to happen.
All it would have taken was docking, what, a third of one of their race costs per races, and it would have been able to stay. When you look at some of the amount their contracts are worth, it's insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one thing I wanted to say, I have about a dozen tabs open here, and this last sort of 10 days with all of this going on, there has been no actual conversation about what's been happening on track. I've got the Guardian page open here now, and there are three Formula One stories on the front page of the sports. All of them are about Horner. It's lover or hater, I quite like her. Marina Hyde wrote the most beautifully devastating opinion piece about the whole thing, in which she used the perfect line, which I'm going to quote because it's just amazing, where it says, at last weekend's Grand Prix, the season opener in Bahrain, footage emerged of Horner having an intense discussion with the arguably even more ghastly father of his unbeatable driver, world champion Max Verstappen, while his Spice Girl wife private jetted in to kiss him for the cameras with the 1,000 Newton jaw clench of a wronged Tory woman, which is just perfect.
That was an excellently well-written line.
And then she points out that with all this going on, it's now in Saudi Arabia, in which a whistleblower would probably have a lot worse treatment than being suspended on full pay.
100%.
So it's a weird world. But, you know, sorry, I was just going to say, this Formula One is at a very weird thing that because, oh, and Horner's also come out saying that the intrusion into his family is a bit mean, which considering he's been basically pimping his family out on Drive to Survive for 4 years is rich.
Darvo.
Yeah. You can't have it both.
Six now, yeah. Isn't it?
Is it?
I think it's season six.
I don't know.
I think 2018 was the first one, so yeah, it would be.
Yeah. So six.
Oh.
We were discussing as well is that Jerry might not have even seen those allegations before she got on that plane, something that we were talking about before, because imagine getting off that plane and being very quickly and very subtly briefed, by the way, XYZ has happened, this is what you have to say if a press person comes up to you. Like, she must be raging on the inside.
She's a pro though. So
oh yeah.
As soon as she's in public, she's gonna make sure she looks as great as she's a nice looking lady. And Spice Girl years coming back to haunt me there. And yeah, they'll have done it. But this is the thing that, you know, even look at what, let's fire up motorsport.com, which is the parent company of Matt's old employer these days. They've changed now. They have FP2 as the lead story. But then out of the five in the main blob, four of them are about Red Bulls, three of them about that. Red Bull, maybe its own worst enemy. Mm. The Jonathan Noble piece from earlier today, I would recommend people going to read as well.
Red Bull may be its own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Is there any doubt in debating that now?
Well, you know, not while I draw breath, but, you know, apart from that. Yeah.
That's the piece that John Noble wrote, and it is very, very well done. He is a good journalist.
Mm. I mean,
former colleague.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that it's not really a surprise, is it? And in actual fact, it sounds awful to say it, but what is going on is giving people a reason to talk about Formula One.
But I'm going to say they're not talking about Formula One. Formula One is what happens in five sessions throughout a season, throughout a weekend.
That is a good point.
This is soap opera. This is everyone talking about the person they think they know because of the Netflix series.
This is content for season 7 of Drive to Survive.
Seriously, in the Netflix offices, there are people unable to stand up because they would embarrass themselves. They're so aroused by what's going on at the moment.
Yeah,
this is not Formula One. And we can complain, you know, every few years, a team does what Red Bull does now. Let's face it. Somebody gets it right and they go, yeah, the Schumacher years, that. Usually the two teammates make it interesting for a few of the races, or, yeah, Barrichello has to give up a place and we can complain about that for the next 20 years. But, you know, Nico and Lewis kept it interesting for usually about 4 races. The idiot with the mullet was able to do it as well. But this, I'm ranting here, this isn't about Formula One. This is about whatever the world Drive to Survive has created and what Liberty are feeding.
Yeah, so it is not it's not Formula One, it is the brand. It's about the brand, and it's reflecting on the brand, which is what everyone's so concerned about. But it feels like a sport that has persistently failed to fix its own roof over years and years and years, and now it's raining. And they've got all these problems and they're looking bad, and they had the opportunity to fix it. You know, Bensoulayem is a kind of a symptom of that, in that he was singularly unequipped to deal with what's happened to Formula One over the last few years. And, you know, in a sense, it was just unfortunate for him, probably, that he came in at a time when there were all these dramatic global movements like Black Lives Matter and things like that, that were sort of coming in and knocking on the door of the sport, and which, you know, it hadn't really had to deal with before. And he's had to deal with some of that stuff. But then on the other hand, you think some of the things like the FIA suddenly getting interested in driver jewellery when they hadn't been enforcing those rules for donkey's years. You have to wonder where that's coming from. But just, I mean, briefly going back to W and things like that, I think it's something certainly in terms of the involvement of women throughout the sport, in all levels in the sport, has been something that I get the feeling that F1 and the FIA have acted as though it's a problem that they've got years and years to address, and that they can kind of kick it down the road a little bit, and they will have to do something in future, but not now. Which I think, no, they absolutely do need to do something now. And it would be better if they did. It would be better for everyone if there was a better gender split in sport. It just would. If you had men and women racing against each other equally at all roles in the paddock, it would just be better. It just would. It's just how things work. I don't know why they're fighting it. But you know, so they're
fighting it because the current brand is making money. You don't change with things. Now, saying that, Liberty's stock price is down 5% over the past month, right? So that's interesting. But you're absolutely right, Matt. But the thing is, these are companies, and we have to look to Liberty here, who are monetizing this up the Yazoo. This is making bank. You don't make changes when things are making bank.
Yeah, and it is about the money, and it has always been about the money and the global audience and stuff, and that's why we go to we go to countries with no motorsport heritage and oppressive regimes in government and all that kind of stuff, because that's where the money comes from. But it just feels to me like, you know, losing W and then setting up F1 Academy, which was something for the future. It's not something for now. And I would have loved it if Formula One had said, right, in 3 years' time, we will have 2 women on the grid. And we will put money into it. We'll put support into it. We'll put the engineering support and the training support and so on. We will promise that 3 years from now, there will be 2 women racing Formula One or something like that. And it would have caused one hell of a fight, but it would have been worth doing. And once you've got them in there, then, you know, that door's open. And, well, you know, there's always the thing of, oh, well, you've got the token person in there. But, you know, I think it should have been something like that rather than, or in addition to something like Academy. Because Academy is good. But, yeah, again, until this year, it was not covered anywhere. There was no streaming. No, it wasn't on television. You couldn't see the races. So yeah. I think that was their kind of, it was like their little sop to Cerberus that was just the minimum requirement, and now they're getting a bit more pressure to do something. But, you know, I think, you know, when you look at WEC, there are women at high level in WEC, not in the top class yet, which I damn well think there should be, but, you know, and Indy Next, there are 2 women, I think, racing next year. You know, there's still one or two here and there. It needs to be a lot more.
Yeah. One of those women in Indy Next should have been the one that was backed, because she probably could have, with the right support. We're talking about Jamie Chadwick, mm-hmm. obviously. She could have possibly been one of those people, but now...
But what does... Not. Academy is one thing, but what's changed in terms of the prospects for the drivers? Because one of the biggest concerns that was voiced about the W Series was that, you know, and this happened with Jamie Chadwick, was winning the championship, it didn't necessarily open mm-hmm. any doors for those drivers. It was still a dead end for her, which is ultimately, I believe, why she's ended up where she is now. You know, and if Academy is the same, then I think the biggest problem it causes is that it gives female drivers very little incentive to bother with it in the first place. You know, they might as well go and seek alternatives elsewhere, because ultimately Academy is a dead end for them. You know, if it's not going to lead to a drive in Formula 3 or Formula 2 or Formula 1, and I appreciate that, you know, that is how, generally speaking, motorsport is done. A driver proves himself in one discipline and then moves on to a different level and so forth. They don't really seem to have those opportunities. So it's all very well having the Academy there, but unless you're giving them that open door to then go and say, right, go and show us what you can do in F3 or F2 or F1, then what's the point?
I mean, I damn well hope it isn't a dead end, because Dorian Pan, who was an absolute superstar in WEC last year, and, you know, driving in the LMP2 class, which is, I guess, like the sports car equivalent of F2, but... it's like you're in the same race as the F1 guys. So she had that exposure. And she was amazing. She was just brilliant. And she could have been in a hypercar this year and maybe challenging for the championship if she got into the right car. But she went into Academy, which is like, it's like someone being in F2 and then stepping down to F4. Why? Why would you do that? But because there's the route to F1, I just hope it doesn't finish her career off or slow it down appreciably, because she was really doing fantastic stuff in sports cars. And it's just, if she ends up in the, you know, the single seater, you know, slow going escalator, then I hope it's the right choice. I hope it works. I hope they make it work. But yeah.
Does a driver change it? Because for all of my hopes, and I still hope Jamie gets a break, and I think she had a solid first year learning India, and that is a big learning curve. Just look at the sort of mediocre drivers that have gone across recently, Roman and the likes, who have struggled in the non-classic tracks, as in the ovals and things. Does a woman making it into a top line seat? Well, top line. Let's put them in a Williams, for example. That you'd have to be a genius, as Alex Albon is proving he is, to make that thing, you know, turn on, let alone anything else. Does that change anything? And I don't know if it does. I wonder if it is something like this. And you know, this is where things like, you know, Project 44 and stuff come in. There needs to be a more diverse base within the teams themselves to make this work. Because I think a driver doesn't do it. Because look at Lewis. Still the only driver of color that I'm aware of in the feeder series, the single-seater series. You've got Bubba in the States in NASCAR. I'm not sure about WEC. I have to check. But yeah, it is not a diverse sport.
No.
And does a woman change it, or does it need a more systemic change? Bubs, go. This is your area to rant. We've had this conversation.
Well, I don't. None of the teams want to be the first one to say go. Nobody wants to be the first person to put a woman in a modern day F1 car, because even though there have been women in the past, that's a whole different era of Formula One now. We are in a completely different era. We have new engines, new regulations, new leadership, new all of it. And no one wants to be the first person to put forth that idea. But in order to get that idea across, you need things like sponsors. You need these people on board with your plan. And unfortunately, even in this current day and age, I don't think that the sponsors who are sponsoring Formula One are... This is just my opinion, just so we don't get sued. I don't think they are going to want to sponsor a team that is the first to put a woman on the line, because they don't want to be seen as controversial. They want to be up there winning titles. They don't want to be there as the one that's in the conflict, as it were. But talking about all this does remind me of just briefly mentioning the arsehole again. Comparing Christian Horner's situation to Susie Wolf's in Formula E. And you think, this man has nearly 100, probably over 100 now, forms of evidence against him, and still nothing's being done. Whereas there were allegations that there was a conflict of interest between Susie and Toto, and she was forced to step down. And it shows, even taking the driver perspective out of it, in the positions of power, I mean, Claire Williams is gone as well. And looking at Susie Bull, she was in Formula E, not even Formula One, after leaving the Formula One world. It really does show that, unfortunately, there is not a place at the moment for women to comfortably be in these positions in Formula One. I mean, who would you say is the most powerful woman in Formula One? It's probably, I can't remember her name, very sorry, that the designer at Red Bull, wasn't it? I can't remember her name, though. She a designer, race engineer, something. Can't remember. See her sitting on the pit wall.
Oh, the strategist.
Yeah, Hannah Schmitz, isn't it? I think her name is. She's the strategist on the wall.
And I'd say she's the highest up woman you've got within these teams.
Yeah. And as I said in a conversation the other day, she quite rightly gets raved about. But I don't think that would be the case if it wasn't for the fact that she worked for a team that was doing so well at the moment. You know, it wouldn't necessarily go to mean that she wouldn't have been doing as good a job as she is at Red Bull had she been doing it for Williams. But
yeah,
no one would be talking about it at Williams. It's a very tough situation. I mean, I've just had a look on Jamie Chadwick's Wikipedia page, and you know, she won the W Series three times. You know, and evidently, having done that, didn't feel as though there was room for her to move forward in, let's call it, you know, the F1 ladder, you know, to try and make it to a higher echelon of single-seater motor racing. And for her sake, I really, really, really hope that Indy Next leads to her getting a seat in an IndyCar, because I have no doubt in my mind that she could do a job there. She clearly has no doubt in her mind as well. She's very confident in what she does. And it would be the next best thing for her, I think, beside Formula One, to get into a seat in IndyCar and to do well there. But it must be incredibly frustrating to be in her position.
I think that's the sad thing for me about the whole W saga is that generation of drivers just got chucked in the bin because there was no sort of parachute for them when that went. And it was, they had the profile, they had the, there was supposed to be some kind of progression from it, which never really happened for most of them. And it just, when the FIA responded by setting up Academy, it was for a much younger generation of drivers. So I think some of the ones who were the youngest ones from W did get to go to Academy. But even then, it's like slow, stepping a step down. It's like from an F3 car to an F4 level car. So it's still involved a step back. And that's that however many years of their career, which will now take longer to get where they're going. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Boney. It is about the and Ellie, it's about the sport, the sort of roots of the sport, the foundations of the sport need to be, you know, overhauled, because just the odd person here and there in a prominent position is not going to cut it. And to say, yeah, I mean, we had, I think, two female TPs in the, you know, relatively recent times, Claire Williams and Monisha Kaltenborn, both of whom get an awful lot of stick despite working, frankly, miracles with the resources that they had. And you look at Williams now and the resources that they've got, and Claire Williams is still the most successful boss of Williams in the last decade. You know, quite dramatically, I think. But people just focus on the last couple of years with the Paddy Lowe saga. Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's the Christian Horner situation is symptomatic of a lot that's wrong with F1. But yeah, I think I suppose you can say on the plus side there are, it is slightly better in other forms of motorsport across the pond and in sports cars. It's still not anywhere near as good as it should be, but there's the sort of green shoots there that more can grow from, I think. Touch wood.
F1 is an old boys club. It 100% is. You still have all of the greats from their time still sticking their nose in. I mean, you've got Bernie Ecclestone still up there, and now I've forgotten his name. I don't know how. He's everywhere. What's the Scottish guy called?
Jackie Stewart.
Yep, Jackie Stewart. They're there every single week, sticking their noses in to all the commentary, everything you can do. And yeah, a lot of people who are relatively new fans wouldn't even be able to tell you that there was ever a woman in these positions of power or driving in Formula One. Like, I remember talking to a friend, and when I was talking about Susie Wolf and her brief stint in a Formula One car, people have no idea. People have absolutely no idea that these things even happened, because they are so brushed under the rug and not talked about. I mean, in this day and age, it's all Verstappen, 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 because he's the only one winning, really. But that doesn't mean that other people's achievements aren't just as valuable. And I feel like there should be more of a focus on saying, oh, well, if they could do it then, why can't they do it now? Why have we taken that step backwards where there was the occasional appearance of a woman? I mean, why don't we get women Formula 2s as test drivers and stuff? It's always the Liam Lawsons of the world. And even though we love Liam, he is, unfortunately, that we know of, a straight white man. So where are these diverse, even in that sense, why can't we bring in someone more diverse just to, you know, sprinkle it in there, test the fields? And I mean, you have people like McLaren and Aston Martin, you know, very, very attempting to get their foot in there. I mean, they've got Rhea Bish in their academy, and Aston Martin have
Jess Hawkins.
Is Jamie still in that? Hawkins, that's it. Jess Hawkins. But even then, they're not doing anything with them.
It's the same with Jamie at Williams. They're not giving them time in the car. And I think it's Tatiana Calderon at Sauber. And she never had any time in the car. And it's like, what are you even hiring these people for?
What is the point?
Despite three young driver tests a year.
Exactly.
And
Williams putting Nick De Vries in a young driver test when he's older than their existing.
But he's been in a Formula One car. Get him out.
Well, this is the risk-averse nature of the sport coming back to bite itself in the ass again. And, you know, let's be bold here. When was the last genuine surprise in driver selection in Formula 1?
For a good reason?
For any reason. You know,
bringing Fernando back. That was the last time I was surprised.
To be fair, Fernando left saying, "I'll be back." And it's Fernando. Love him, hate him. I wouldn't cross the road to urinate on him if he was on fire. But he is a great driver, so you'd have him in the car. But
do you mean a surprise in terms of the appointment, or a surprise in terms of how they've done since becoming an F1?
No, just you know, someone getting a seat where you've gone, oh, and then not been terribly disappointed with. And I don't mean Nick De Vries. That was I felt bad for him. Yeah, one good race and being thrown into Toro Rosso or whatever they're called this week, Minardi. We'll just call them Minardi. That's a bear pit at the best of times. But honestly, who's this is terrible. I'm actually busy looking at when the next WEC race is, and it's not until April. But I don't actually know all the drivers. If you ask me to name all 20 drivers, good man. In Formula One, I'm having to look it up.
No WEC race for a little while, but there is an IMSA race next weekend. No, yeah, not this weekend coming, but the one after, I think. I think it's the 13th. And IMSA races are free to streaming, IMSA.tv. And it's the same hypercar class as in WEC. So you've got the Porsches, Cadillac, Acura, and BMW, and Lamborghini will be racing at this next one. So I think that, and those races they're really good fun. The circuits in the States are great. They're not too long. They're only like 2 hour races, I think, mostly in the States. So I would just give one of those a shot and see how you get on with it. It's worth, quite a few drivers over from Europe as well. So probably some familiar names in there.
Sorry to segue back, but just thinking about the rookies that have gone into F1 in the most recent years, who have you got? You got Oscar Piastri, Logan Sargeant.
Yeah, and then you've got to go back to like Mick Schumacher and the Russian guy we don't mention.
Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
and then before that, it's George and Lando and Alex. Yeah.
But you see, the thing there is, we knew those guys were going to be great as soon as they hit F3.
You're looking at several F2 champions there, which are obviously going to make their way into F1. And Nikita Mazepin, as people like to call him, was not really much of a surprise because of the way the sponsorship.
Daddy's money.
Yeah, with Haas at the time. Logan was kind of a surprise because, and okay, I know. Again, we're talking about money here, aren't we? But there were and are, I think, better drivers than Logan that are not in Formula One at the moment.
Yeah.
With the greatest respect.
It was not a surprise only on the basis that by the time Williams signed him, he was just about the only driver potentially with a super license that was available to Williams and probably came with a budget of some description. Because who was the guy who continually blew his own chances? Name's completely fallen out of my head. The guy who rammed someone and then he kind of came back and then he pissed off Red Bull and then was at Williams for a while. Dan something?
Tipton.
Dick Tantrum.
Yeah.
Dan Tipton, that's right.
Yeah.
He would have probably had the seat had he not screwed up yet again.
Yes.
But then failed into FE. It's the Mansells and drivers like that, Damon Hill even, I think, wouldn't get into F1 these days because they haven't had that sort of stellar F1 career, a stellar junior career, and they haven't got masses of money behind them or a manufacturer, or they're in a junior program. Because it used to be that...
Well, I think that's the thing, is it's taking a while. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
You used to get this sort of class of driver who maybe not done great in the junior formulae, but got a shot in Formula One and sort of grabbed it with both hands and showed that there was something about the bigger, more powerful cars that they could just deal with and they could just you know, people like Mansell kind of came into it on strength of personality alone.
James Hunt.
Yeah. You know, admittedly, he had the backing of Lord Hesketh,
yes,
but he wouldn't have got into F1 any other way. So, and it's very, very few drivers. So that, you know, I go back to this thing, there aren't enough teams in F1 to give all the drivers who deserve it a shot. And we need like two more teams, I think, at least. And because of the protectionist nature of F1, we've had a very good chance at an additional team now just blown because they don't fancy sharing the prize money.
I think we're at a point now. We should really wrap this up because otherwise we're just going to sit here complaining. And if you get me started on Jackie Stewart, we will be here all night.
I was going to say, I'm looking at the notes and we've only covered, what, two of them?
Yeah.
let's go around the table, right? Because the last bit on our notes was the general state. I think we've kind of said that. There is a Grand Prix happening at the moment in a country that is happy to spend its money to distract from everything that it does. Are we going to watch any of it? I'll start, and my answer is easy because it's England Ireland tomorrow, and I'm going to be in the pub on Saturday even, and I'm going to be in the pub with my dad and my wife because that's far more important than Formula One. So no, I will not be watching any Formula One because rugby. Adam.
Well, I watched FP2 earlier with Soph and was gobsmacked to see Mr. Verstappen not at the very top of the timing charts. But of course, in free practice, we know that this is just, it happens, and then come quali day and come race day.
Eighth last week, he still won.
Well, exactly. All the hopes and dreams, you know, we build all these hopes up that something different might happen this weekend, and then of course,
he's
Super Max comes along and
he's trolling.
Yes, he is. To answer the question, I'm going to be very, very frank. If he gets pole, no, I will not watch Grand Prix. And I know that there are going to be people listening to this who are saying, well, judging by the way this podcast has gone and previous podcasts, that's because you don't like Red Bull and you don't like Max winning. I don't care who wins. I don't care who wins. I just want to see somebody else win a race. And not only that, I want to see motor racing, which I don't think Formula One is at the moment. I think it's... Well, certainly what Max Verstappen is doing at the moment is not motor racing. Who is he racing?
I just want to say that it's not motor racing, but it's impressive. I will give him that.
Yeah, the engineering skill is...
He's maximising what he's got, which is good. Sorry, I just want to say, trying to be not completely anti Red Bull here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It is impressive, but it ultimately, I don't really think it represents sport in the truest form, where you have a certain number of people going head to head with one another. It's as I said in the message yesterday. You know, how many drivers, if you had the opportunity to speak to Lando and Oscar and what they got into F1 for, their answer is never going to be because, you know, one day I really hope that I could come second to Max Verstappen in a Grand Prix. They all want an opportunity to win the races. Yes, Red Bull have got their car very right, and other teams have got their cars not so right, and, you know, fair play to Red Bull. But to then have Ben Sulayem come out and make comments like, well, you know, now is Red Bull's time, we've just got to take it on the chin. It's very, very difficult for somebody that loves F1 like I do to hear somebody in his position say that, because ultimately it's their job to try and find a way of making F1 more competitive and more interesting to watch. And I don't think that they are doing that at the moment. I don't think that they have any real intention of doing that at the moment. It's very, very easy to become very disillusioned with a sport. And I guess as well that we were all promised a certain something out of the new regulations, which just has not been delivered, which is that the racing would be closer and that, you know, the races would be far more interesting to watch. I don't think they're any more interesting than they were 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
They brought ground effect back and one guy in Formula One just happens to be a ground effects guy.
Yes, that's simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing for me that's different now, certainly since the introduction of the hybrid regulations, is that it's like that viral tweet, advantage locked in for years. It seems to be that once a team gets it right on a rule set, it's a lot harder to change, to challenge them than it used to be. And even then, actually, when you look at the last rule set with Williams dominance, Mercedes dominance, yes, they were they did win it from 2014 to 2020, but Ferrari gave them a real push in sort of, you know, was it 2017-18? You know, Red Bull was there and there or thereabouts a lot more often than I think people give them credit for. And then, you know, back to when Williams was super dominant, it was only for a couple of years at a time. You know, Ferrari, Schumacher years, that was what, 2000 to 2004, I think? So, yeah, because 5 and 6 was...
And in those years, we had Häkkinen and all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you look at some of those earlier eras where the results indicate that it was a dominant performance, actually you had a lot more challenge. So when Red Bull's last stint with Vettel, actually a couple of those seasons were really very close, either with his teammate or with another team or even with a couple of other teams. So like there was the one year where I think something like 4 drivers from 3 different teams went into the last race with a decent mathematical shot at the title. So I have to say I wasn't going to watch it, and then I ended up binging the whole series of Drive to Survive. And the amount of attention they put on second place, there were several episodes where it was basically, oh, second place in the championship, second place in the constructors. Like and they were getting really excited about who's getting second place. It was like first place, like,
because they have to.
I mean, it's just indicative of the whole nature of the season, where it's just first place is like almost we just ignore it and the race is over second.
Well, I was going to say, to answer your question, Dad, I will be watching it, however, with my little makeshift paper cutout that covers first and changes the positions. So I will create my own winner. I'll probably have it on in the background and hope that another team will do quite well with a
trademark circuit. That and sell them.
Yeah, I will. Watch my Etsy shop blow up.
Right. Well, I think let's reconvene in a couple of weeks and see what's, or whatever happens with what's going on here. And I think we can keep this going better than we have for the last year, because we've been off. But thank you. This has been good fun to get all together. It's always nice to see my daughter as well.
I talk to you all the time. I don't know what you're talking about.
And me and Matt, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be fair,
not that we can see you.
Yeah. Adam hiding behind his
yeah, my camera did fail 5 minutes in, and I've not been able to recover it. Yeah. So,
You know, I always talk to you, Dad, every time I get a virus on my computer.
Yes. You do, yeah. There you go.
Matt Bone tech support.
How is he with radiators?
Oh, well, I didn't actually tell him, so who knows. But speaking of radio, so I do need to go empty my little pot that I've got.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast is being timed on how quickly Ellie's vase fills up underneath the radio. So, gentlemen and lady, thank you so much for your time. We will return, and hopefully we'll have most racing things to talk about. But what, you know, I have actually recovered that Derek Bell interview, so we should really put that out. So thank you ever so much, everyone, for joining us. We will return. We have been the boundary of disaster, and we hope you stay away from it.
In that sense.
The boundary of disaster. In that sense. Not the podcast. We'd like you to come back.
So we've been the boundary of disaster. Fuck off.
And there you go. We'll end it there. Bye-bye, everybody.